Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And hey, everybody, Party Friday here at the Chuck and Julie Show. Chuck Bonnivel, Julie Hayden here, The Truth Straight Up, sponsored by America's Citizen Press and Dr. Julie McCallan and Denver Synergenics. I'm here in the Chuck and Julie World Headquarters, and Chuck is at the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle, our subsidiary World Headquarters, joining us by phone. Hey, Chuck.
How's it going? Just finished the executive committee for the Republican Party and with some great victories for the grassroots and actually made a difference. So I'm kind of excited.
Go. And thanks to Charlene's idea calling it the winning caucus. So we'll explain that to everybody and let Chuck bring us up to date there. We've got Matt Arnold joining us here, it looks like momentarily. Wanted to talk to him about Ryan Call. And then also at the bottom of the hour, Sue Moore. She has the Liberty Scorecards Heroes in the last legislative session. So got a lot to talk about today in this Party Friday. I see Matt is there. Hey, Matt, thank you for your time. Appreciate it. Whoop, turn your mic on. Is your microphone... There, I hear breathing. There you go.
Yeah, so I guess it defaulted to being on mute. So here I am.
There you go. Okay, Chuck is joining us. I mean, I'm here live. Chuck is live. He's on the telephone, Matt, just so you know the logistics here. And we have scores of people listening on Zoom and across the country. Okay, so wanted to talk to you with Campaign Integrity Watchdog. The news came out last week that Ryan Call, a two-time chairperson of the Colorado Republican Party, when was he chair, from 2011 to 2015, essentially stole roughly $280,000 from the pro-Trump political action committee that he was the treasurer of. And I was kind of teasing this, and it's now under investigation. One thing I don't understand.
It's gone beyond investigation. There's actually a formal complaint filed.
Right.
Which, when it comes to the Attorney Regulation Council, for it to get to that stage, they've already gone through an exhaustive investigation. So it's unusual that they actually take action to sanction lawyers who break ethics rules. And the fact that they're doing so against Ryan Call shows that they have a very ironclad case.
That's what it seems like to me. And which is
they haven't yet punished Ryan Call. That's what they're considering.
No, but they have filed a complaint and it will go before a judge. So it's gone way past the intake stage.
Okay.
And way past the preliminary investigation stage. This is now a legal proceeding.
Okay. And what I don't get is why it's not a criminal proceeding, but we'll get to that in a second. But Matt, I don't know, you with campaign. I mean, I've been sort of tweeting is anyone, this is the Ryan Call who basically tried to squelch all the gun recall efforts in Colorado, who endorsed Joe Biden for president. I mean, is anybody really surprised that he's turned out to be this much of a scumbag? I mean, let me ask you, you've been keeping an eye on him for years. And why don't you kind of explain what it is that he's basically been doing?
Right. And this is not the first time he's been accused of ethics violations and law breaking. It is the first time that the Attorney Regulation Council actually is doing their job, which is wonderful news, about time, and are actually taking him to task and prosecuting him for an ethics violation, which can and I think will result in him being disbarred. I mean, this is a really egregious violation, but it's not the first time. It's not even the first ethics complaint filed against Ryan Call. And Ryan Call's lawbreaking and lack of ethics has been obvious for a long time. Some of us have brought this to the attention of people over many years. You might recall that when he was running for re-election in 2013, there was a sort of a grassroots movement, no confidence in Call, for people to basically say, hey, you know, this guy should not be voted in for another term as Colorado State Party chairman. Unfortunately, the voting members of the Central Committee apparently did not want to open their eyes to rampant corruption and lawbreaking that was endemic with Ryan Call, and they voted him in to another term. And then fortunately, when he ran for a third term, enough people had seen the light and voted to replace him with Steve House. And that
raises a whole other set of issues. Yeah.
But
fortunately, Chuck was at the committee meeting today, so we can get him to keep an eye on things. But Chuck, you were kind of making the comment too that this complaint actually came from his former law firm partners, which is kind of, once they realized that the partners that he was with this PAC, once they realized that, wait a minute, Ryan Call was secretly paying himself $5,000 a month from the PACs. He just stole.
He was taking out money purportedly for legal fees by Hale and, gosh, I forget the second name.
Hale Westfall.
Of
Westfall.
The law firm. What is it?
Hale and Westfall.
Hale and Westfall. And, but in fact, just assigning the check to himself.
Yeah.
And so the partner is going, wait a minute. I mean, one thing to cheat the Trump PAC, but you're cheating your partners too.
That's what'll get the lawyers involved. Well, I mean,
exactly. The attorney regulation council is finally involved. It's okay in their eyes to lie, cheat, and steal, as long as you're not lying and cheating and stealing against your law partners.
Yeah.
You can commit perjury.
Yeah, that's never okay. Come on, Ryan.
That's okay.
Basic just rules of cheating.
Steal from your own partners.
Well, okay, so let's put this in. So that he was the treasurer of the pro-Trump political action committee and stole basically what he was doing is, like Chuck said, he was just transferring the money out. Now, at the same time, because this raises questions, Colorado, he was also the treasurer of the Colorado Republican Party's IEC, right? And so
he was legal counsel.
Well,
he was legal counsel to the IEC. He did, in theory, have the right to write checks out of the IEC, but who knows, you know.
Well, and if I were on, say, the Colorado State Party Executive Committee, I might be interested in a full forensic audit of every expenditure the IEC made to Ryan Call or Hale Westfall, because if Ryan Call did this with this other PAC, where expenditures from that PAC were reported as being made to Hale Westfall, it might be worth going in, looking at those books and confirming that the checks that the IEC wrote to Hale Westfall actually all made it to Hale Westfall and not directly into Ryan Call's pocket, or other expenditures that supposedly went to some other entity did not get funneled to Ryan Call's pocket.
Well,
again, and this is not the first time that Ryan Call has done this. It's the most massive and the largest scale theft that Ryan has committed. But Ryan has siphoned money out of other political committees before. He's siphoned money out of the state party before. He's siphoned money back when he was chair of the Denver Republican Party. You know, when he left as chairman of the Denver Party and went up to the state level, he had touted all his great accomplishments at the Denver County level party. It turned out that the people inheriting the party discovered that the cupboard was bare. Ryan had bankrupted the county party. In fact, they owed money and they had to dig themselves out of a hole. Same thing happened when Ryan Call left as chair of the state party and House took over. House discovered that hey, there was a huge hole and a whole bunch of bills due. And of course, that instantly got him in bed with the RNC because, you know, he was pretty much between a rock and a hard place in terms of the state party finances. So this is not a new behavior by Ryan Call. Ryan Call has been a crook for a long, long time.
He basically, as you said, it was not like it was some massive secret, right? I mean, which begs the question, you know, why didn't the Republican Party do something about it before? And Chuck, and you're in a great position now as a member of the executive committee to do something about it now, because I think it raises, who's been watching the books? Who's been watching the bank accounts? Clearly,
Ryan Call.
Right.
Ryan Call.
Right.
The IEC's books are being done by a Utah firm who are buddies of Ryan Call. It's a real little Ryan Call mafia. But, oh, yeah, we've audited ourselves and we found nothing wrong.
Right. And Chuck, and you can't even get him to show you the budget, right? So I can't imagine. How do you think they'd go
They'll show me the budget, or at least the partial budget. but I can't take it out of the room.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I can just take my photographic memory.
This really should be a call for the executive committee to demand a full forensic audit of the Colorado Republican Party IEC books, going back to, and you remember when this was formed back in 2015, the person who was running the party at that time was convicted of a felony theft from another committee and kicked to the curb. Back in 2015, Ryan Call's personal choice to run the IEC, Tyler Harbor, again, someone out in Virginia that was a buddy of Ryan Call, was running this thing. And what did that IEC spend in that first year? Nothing but payments to Ryan Call's law firm and Tyler Harbor's consulting.
And he'd still be getting away with it if his law, that's my thing too, is nobody in the Republican Party, it seems to me, from what you're describing, they should have and probably were aware. Nobody cared until he tried to cheat his law partners. And then the law partners, as we said, but you can't cheat law partners. And that's when people get involved. I mean, Chuck, what is your sense? Do you think that there would be any kind of, as there should be?
Let me tell you an old lawyer joke. So a woman comes in to have a codicil to her will. And it's a pretty simple thing. And so the lawyer does it, and she hands him $100. But inadvertently, there's another $100 there, so that was $200. And so the bar question is, for attorneys, was not to return the $100 to the woman, but to tell his law partners about the extra $100.
And in Ryan Call's case, no, you don't tell him about it either. Well, this goes, though, to Chuck.
His answer to that one would be, no, you don't tell your partner about the extra $100.
Well, and Chuck, this goes to something that we've been talking about, and I want to get Chuck and then Matt, your thoughts on this, too. So far deeper than Ryan Call, I don't know why there's not a criminal investigation, but, when the Republican Party of Colorado was like, how come no one has confidence in us? It's like, well, heck, I don't know. You know, maybe because nobody's keeping an eye on things. And then when you have people like Matt Arnold, people like Chuck, try to ask questions, they make it, Christy Burton Brown, granted, maybe things are changing, but previously it'd been like, hey, you stupid citizens, if we wanted, to know your opinion, we'd give it to you. I mean, do you think, is that changing, Chuck? And to me, this is sort of an underlying reason, one of the many reasons why we need to let the people back into the Colorado Republican Party.
I think things are changing a little bit. I mean, nothing's going to change totally, right? But we have some grassroots people. Executive committee is always controlled by the establishment. They've had all their members, and they have won almost every vote. This last time, we were able to have an in-person meeting, even though the establishment didn't want to have it. We approved money for outreach to Hispanics and Blacks and others, even though others, the establishment was against it. Things are changing. Whether they'll change quick enough, I don't know. But I can see at least some movement in the iceberg.
Matt, what do you think?
There's always, is it a matter of hope triumphing over experience? It may be. I do think that there is at least some grounds for hope. We do have new leadership, which at least is talking the right game if they follow through. And I sincerely hope that they will. And I encourage everyone listening to this podcast to reach out to their executive committee, anyone, their state representative, because elected officials have a voice in this too, and put some pressure on them to do this full forensic audit, to be transparent, to earn back the trust of the state party rank and file, who have been gypped, who have been ripped off, who have been exploited ruthlessly, who've had their money be siphoned off for the personal benefit of a bunch of establishment cronies and hacks. And for what result? We've been losing, Colorado Republicans have been losing elections hand over fist every time, for the past several years since these guys have been in office. You can pretty much track the decline of Republican fortunes, electoral fortunes in Colorado, with the ascendance of crooks and cronies like Ryan Call and Jeff Hayes and other folks who, I mean, they presided over massive losses while personally doing just fine. And that's all their right. consultant cronies doing just fine. Hey, folks, if you are contributing to the Republican Party or the core IEC or any of these things in the hopes of actually getting electoral results, and you're not holding these people accountable, you might as well just take out your checkbook or pick out your cash, take your lighter, light it up, because you'll get more benefit out of the entertainment of watching the flame than you will for actually giving the money to these people.
Well, and then, Amanda, because then you make a really good point.
I'll tell you, for the next IEC meeting.
Executive committee meeting.
I'll bring a motion for forensic audit of all transactions by Ryan Call and Associates.
Right. Well, because here's my question. Okay, so Ryan Call clearly figured out, like any crook, right? They figure out that like no one's watching the bank accounts, so yeah, I can just take it. And then once people, Matt, as you said, people started saying, "Hey, wait a minute, something's funny here." Nobody stopped him, and they squashed apparently efforts to look into this further. And so, I mean, how hard would it be for somebody else to be like, well, maybe I can get some money too. Like, I mean, who knows? I mean, nobody's been keeping an eye on the most important part, which is the money. And that's money that people, citizens are donating. It's not like federal grant money.
Well, as a practical matter, they do have audits of the Republican committee, but I think we need a special one for all transactions involving Hale, Westfeld, and Ryan Call.
Right.
And it needs to get into more than just a superficial review of, oh, well, yeah, this expenditure tracks what's reported, we're good. We certainly don't want to have Macaulay, the folks that are running the books, audit themselves. I'm sorry, Utah crony consultants, you're not trustworthy.
Right. Well, and now let me ask you then my other question, and that is,
I want to go to another point.
Okay.
Republicans started losing, not because the establishment was running the party, because it's run the party for 100 years. They started losing because the Democrats, with the connivance of the establishment Republicans, changed the voting process. So you had absentee ballots without excuse. You had mail-in ballots. You had ballot harvesting, and you have everything else. They've learned how to corrupt the election. And quite frankly, the establishment Republicans are happy with that, because they figure, absent something, they can't hold back the grassroots.
Right.
They need the Democrat help to hold back the grassroots.
Well, and then if you could just go in and steal the money right and left. I mean, let's go back, $280,000.
Ryan Call. Pretty soon he's talking real money, right?
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, he was paying himself $5,000 a month. And then he had the IEC. I mean, it's just astonishing to me. And maybe that you guys are both, you know, more lawyery than me. But why is this not a criminal investigation? Why hasn't somebody from the Republican Party filed a criminal complaint with a district attorney or a law enforcement agency?
Well, it probably wouldn't come from the party because it didn't steal from the party. But I would think that the PAC folks certainly could and should file a criminal complaint.
Yes.
With, I'm guessing, the Denver District Attorney. So your buddy Beth McCann will has her chance to shine by prosecuting a blatant thief Ryan Call, who she's covered for in the past. So, you know, maybe it might be embarrassing for her. But yeah, I think it should be a pretty easy case to make, but people withstanding have to file a complaint. I couldn't file it. Chuck couldn't file it. So people were actually wrong.
What about if I contributed? Right. Well, I guess you'd have to tie it to did he steal your actual contribution? I guess, right. Maybe something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be kind of like a shareholder derivative lawsuit. And those are really tough. Chuck probably knows a lot more about that than I do, but that would be difficult to do as a contributor. It would have to be the folks that are actually running the entity. And again, same thing, if this forensic audit shows that Ryan Call was self-dealing from the core IEC or from the state party would be the ones to bring, I think, not only an ethics complaint, but potentially criminal charges of their own.
Well, then, so Chuck, and so you're saying
the IEC may have to run their own criminal complaint, but as a practical matter, we also know that DAs can take judicial notice that someone's stealing funds, and they don't have to say, well, there's no formal, that person got raped, but no official complaint. They can go out and bring charges.
Point.
Beth McCann right now could go, assuming she has jurisdiction, and I don't know where the Trump thing was based out of, but.
Well, it was registered here in Colorado. It was actually registered out of the Hale Westfall office, which is, yes, downtown Denver. So
Beth McCann does not have to wait until someone darkens her door.
Well, and that's going back too to just the, you know, Ryan called for because I remember, Chuck, we were, you know, doing the show on KNUS, and Matt, we had you talking about some of the establishment shenanigans, and I think that's way too kind of a word given what we now know. And we were hammered, we were criticized, we were,
vilified, attacked.
Exactly.
For raising. Disloyal, told that we were all liars and making this thing up and it was all political and yada, yada.
Right.
You know, and look, it's not a matter of politics. Ryan Call might actually agree with us on 80% of political goals. At least, you know, he would mouth the words, but he's a crook.
Yeah.
And crooks should be held accountable. I don't care if they're of the same ideology. And Ryan's whole little cabal, I mean, it's not just Ryan. It's you know, as Chuck pointed out, Wayne Williams and what he did as Secretary of State. It's Bob Gardner, who, by the way, a new news article this morning comes out that he is now under ethics investigation by the Senate Ethics Committee. I can tell you he's also under another investigation by the Attorney Regulation Council after his last ethics violation resulted in him being referred for remedial ethics training, which apparently didn't take.
Well, yeah. Okay. So Matt, just a couple more questions, because then we have Sue Moore coming on. Let me ask you this. So what I think you said was important, where that this right now it's before the Office of Attorney.
Before a judge. Right. Yeah. The OERC has actually filed an ethics complaint. So it'll go before an ethics judge, and it'll be, you know, kind of like a full blown court case. Ryan Call will show up. He can bring witnesses and evidence. The OERC has to prove their case. I think it's a preponderance of evidence. And frankly, if they blow this, they might as well just go home and close up their shop, because if they can't convict him on this, they're completely worthless.
My guess would be Ryan Call won't show up. I mean, if I were him, I'd be a little concerned about walking into a Colorado courtroom. Just, you never know, right? So my guess would be
he might not leave.
Yeah, he's not going to show up. He's not going to respond.
Yeah. Well, he'll send some lawyer to represent him. And in fact, so I became aware of the fact that Ryan Call was under investigation for ethics violations back in summer of 2019, when I was trying to get him served in another case for yet another bunch of law breaking that he did. And, became aware that he had been terminated with Hale Westfall. And, you know, they didn't obviously come out with a press release that, hey, we fired our partner Ryan Call because he was stealing from us, because it's embarrassing. But it did kind of, connecting the dots, it was obvious that he'd been fired. He fled the state and moved to Utah to, you know, be closer to family, I guess. And it's always what you do, right? If you're both
this time,
you take more time to be a family.
Right.
But it clearly he fled the state. And in not until this news item came out, now almost 2 years after the investigation was started. So that shows you how long this process takes. Did the exact nature of his violation come to light? But, you know, it was obvious that Ryan Call had breached some sort of ethical rule or law. No other reason that Hale Westfall would have fired him. I figured it had something to do with campaign finance because of the nature of what Ryan Call's business was. And, you know, so it's just a matter of which one of the many committees that he's robbed blind decided to go after him.
Well, and again, I find it hard to believe that nobody brought any of this up to any Republican Party officials, that they're like, what? We are shocked. I tell you, shocked. You know, I mean, you'd think that somebody somewhere would have called and said, hey, are you guys got any questions? Are you aware of this? So, well, Matt, listen, thank you for your time and for explaining it. Thank you. Let us know anytime too, you're aware of somebody else being under investigation. We'll like bring that out.
Bob Gardner, for example, and there is an open investigation at the Secretary of State's office. The current one, they're looking into ethics violations by apparently Wayne Williams and Suzanne Steyer. Again, at this point, they're not commenting on what those allegations or violations are. But independent journalists have confirmed there is an open ethics investigation involving what they're saying is the previous administration So that narrows it down to those two people.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that then too. Matt Arnold, campaign integrity watchdog.
What are the charges against Bob Gardner?
So Bob Gardner is being charged with an ethics violation under Rule 41, that basically he was sponsoring and promoting legislation that it was a conflict of interest that he personally benefited from. Interestingly enough, I filed a similar complaint back in 2018. It was quashed by the then Republican leadership because they didn't want the embarrassment. So now they're getting a double dose of embarrassment now that the Democrats are in charge. So again, this points out the need. Police up your own. Hold the crooks accountable. If they're in your party and they're crooks, get rid of them. Right. Don't try to cover it up, because it's going to explode at some point, and you're all going to be covered in the crap that you're trying to hide. So if there's crap being dealt by some of your elected officials or party officers, clean it up, get them out, and come clean, because it will come back and bite you sooner or later.
All right. Absolutely. Matt, thank you. Appreciate your time. All right. Matt Arnold there with
and guys at
Campaign Integrity Watchdog. So we're going to have some more come on from the Liberty Scorecard. There's a little bit of good news. Well, at least there were some heroes, let me put it that way, at the state legislature this past session. But Chuck, why don't you in the meantime? Oh, I see
you.
Yep, I see Sue. Chuck, why don't you, though, before we bring Sue up real quick, just kind of talk a little bit about you were at the executive committee meeting, which is 20 people out of this Colorado Republican Party Central Committee, which is what, a few hundred people. And what were you guys, real briefly, what were you guys doing? Okay, what were you guys doing today?
And then, a lot of things. One of the things I wanted to get was money for outreach efforts. We've got a great vice chair, Priscilla Rahm. She's part African-American, part Korean, and real a fireball. Yeah. And I need to get her some money so she could reach out to pastors, to local Hispanic groups, to everything else, because she's doing a great job. And we got her, you know, some money. So that's a 14-4 vote. Some people absolutely opposed it.
Some people were opposed to reaching out to minority and diverse communities. They somehow thought that was a bad idea.
No, that's not how they would express it. They said, we shouldn't have a separate line item. The chair should be able to allocate whatever they want. I said, no, I want Priscilla to have at least some money to reach out. And that was a shock. You often don't get that. So that was really encouraging. We had a debate on some initiatives, a couple which were not very controversial. One about a property tax. The one that was controversial is this LEAP program. We had a proponent of LEAP from Ready Colorado, and a lot of us said, I don't hear from one side. I want to hear from the opponent side, because there are a lot of Republicans who think this is just another false flag for Democrats and pouring another $150 million into our corrupt education system. And that was successful by a 9-8 vote. And now we're going to have another meeting in which opponents of this proposal want to come. So that was exciting for me. I mean, we actually got some real things done. And it was a very animated but cordial conversation.
And so this was a good first outing of Charlene's winning caucus, the winning caucus first outing.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. And we'll talk more about that later, because that's a lot of important stuff. But I'd like to bring on now Sue, if you can go ahead and come pop back up. Sue Moore, she is with the Republican Liberty Scorecard. And we've had her on before talking about some of the bills that they were keeping track of. But the 2021 legislative session just ended in Colorado. And Sue, thank you for your time, first of all. And why don't you come go ahead and just tell us, maybe explain a little bit what it is you guys do, and then talk. We have a few heroes, at least sort of, that we could.
Not enough, but yes, there are a few that we want to recognize. But yeah, thank you for having me on, Julie. I appreciate it. So the Liberty Scorecard is run by the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado. It's a national organization. We run the Colorado Charter. I'm the state chairman, so that's where we come from. It's been around since 1991, the Liberty Caucus. We haven't, we started it in about 2011 here in Colorado. It kind of went dormant for a little while after the Ron Paul campaign. I resurrected it back in 2016 with some other patriots. So that's kind of where the organization came from. And then, so the Liberty Scorecard kind of sprung from Principles of Liberty, which was an organization that ran a scorecard from 2011 through 2018. It was run by Rich and Lori Bratton,
right?
Who were just rock stars on, you know, tracking people, legislation that's running through the Capitol and keeping people, holding people accountable down there. So when they left the state to move to Wyoming, my organization decided to pick that up. That was something that that really left a void in the state. So we decided that was an important function for someone to pick up. So we basically stole their methodology with their with their blessing. You know, Rich checks in every once in a while and says, yeah, great job. So, yeah, we've modernized it, automated it quite a bit. So we're able to follow even more legislation than Principles of Liberty was. We've got some great software, and I've got a great team of people who help me out with that. So so that's kind of where it, you know, the genesis of the Liberty Scorecard. This is our third full year of running it. We started back in 2019. Last year, I think we rated 82 bills in 2019. We kind of didn't get started until late. But then last year, 2011, we rated 411 bills. This year we've, or I'm sorry, 449 bills. This year we've got 385. So that's 385 bills out of the 623 bills that were introduced down at the Capitol.
And one of the things, let me interrupt you real quick for folks listening. One of the reasons this is good is if you've ever tried to read the bills, I mean, they don't make any sense at all. I mean, you need their legalese, their politician ease. And one of the things that you guys do, and I think it's a great job, is you kind of read the bill and say, okay, here's what it's saying. And here's, and you give people, here are liberty standards, and you compare it on that. And then the other good thing you do is you don't just take a politician's word that they're going to be conservative or they're going to be liberty minded. And you take a look at how they actually vote and then rank them on it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So we have three overriding principles of liberty that we follow. We look at individual rights, free markets, and limited government. And then there's subcategories within those. There's equal protection, rule of law. We've got personal responsibility. We've got basically eight minor categories, if you will. So as we're reading a bill, and let me back up a little bit. There are six people on this Liberty Scorecard Committee.
Wow.
We've got Carl Honegger, who's our vice chair, Steve Dorman, who's been a longtime activist in Jefferson County, former Senator Tim Neville, who knows the ins and outs of the legislative process. H. Paul Cohen is a retired attorney here in Denver, so he kind of helps us with the legal aspects. And then Victoria Partridge, who ran for House District 2. She's kind of new to politics, but she's very passionate about this and eager to learn. So those are the people who read these bills on a weekly basis. We have a huge spreadsheet online that we follow. When you're reading a bill, you're inputting your comments, you're looking at it through the lens of liberty, if you will. We've got a worksheet that we work off of that basically asks a series of questions. Does this bill expand or contract government? Is it fiscally responsible? Does it create certain classes of people for special treatment? Does it reinforce free markets or does it take away from that? So there's a whole series of questions that you're asking while you're reading a bill and looking at the fiscal note. So anyway, there's a process that we go through. It's kind of a meat grinder thing. It's not pretty, but at the end of the day, when we're having our weekly conference calls, you've got to be able to back up your position, whether you want to support or oppose that bill. So that's how the process works.
And who was then, as you rank the lawmakers? Okay.
Let me ask a couple questions.
Sure.
Obviously, our laws are adopted by our legislature, but they also can be through ballot initiatives. And one of the ballot initiative 25 is starting this huge bureaucracy for after school programs. Your all's review of that would be enormously helpful because, you know, you can make a bill sound like, oh yeah, this supports liberty and conservative values. Yeah, but if you really look at the actual, what will actually happen, it may or may not. There's a debate in the, executive committee about whether this initiative 25, which will tax another 125,000 purportedly for after school programs going to disadvantaged and priority, And I have to say that I thought the exec committee did a great job. They turned it down by 9-8, by and large, because we only heard from the proponents of this legislation. Would you all be able to use your magic to review that and then give a report? So in 2 weeks, I've got to report back, or at least everybody's going to report back, and we have a Zoom meeting. And I desperately want to know, is this really a great idea? If it is, then I want to support it. But if it really is just another huge bureaucracy that Democrats are really just conning Republicans into, I want to know that too. And the one thing I love about the Liberty Scorecard is you have defined criteria, and you put a bill, and this is in form of a bill. This would be legislation, just not through the legislature, but through citizen initiative. What it scores? Would that be possible? I know I'm asking you on air, so that's tough, but would it be possible for you?
Well, it's really pretty simple, Chuck. We would oppose that based on it. It's an expansion of government. It's a brand new program. It probably requires a whole lot of new bureaucracy. It's an unproven concept. It's outside of our wheelhouse.
Because you're actually, if it isn't somebody's wheelhouse, you're going to find yourself burdened with another huge one. Could we officially request that you give your analysis of it that I could present?
Well, we could certainly take a look at it. I'm not familiar with that, but there was something similar.
Well, yeah.
It's
really important because we're all
here. Rather than we'll communicate.
I can tell you already, we're going to oppose it.
She's saying no, just based on that.
Well, don't tell me already.
Limited government.
All right, check this out.
I'm trying to get something done here. We're wheeling and dealing here, Joy. And then I want to, if you wouldn't mind, could you appear by Zoom at the executive committee to indicate why you're opposed? Because they've had the guy from.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sue.
Sure. It wouldn't go very far.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of not how we work. You know, basically what we do because we want to hold elected officials accountable.
Yeah.
So, you know, there will be ballot initiatives that come up, but that's not the purpose of the Liberty
Scorecard. That's not your deal.
And, you know, I could show you what our methodology is. It's actually on our website, which is RLC.
No, I need somebody to testify because it'll make all
right, well, Chuck,
the difference
all right,
in the world.
Chuck, all right. We're moving on. She can't.
All the difference
let's
in the
take
world.
This offline, Chuck, and we can discuss
we'll
that.
We'll figure it out. Because all I want to ask you, the reason we wanted to have her come on, because there were some heroes. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about. This last legislative session, why don't you talk about who the hero, the winner, the Liberty Scorecard person, legislator of the year, and maybe some of the other people too.
Sure. Well, our big winner this year was Shane Sandridge. He's a House representative down in El Paso County. We actually drove down there last night, a couple of us, to award him his plaque. He scored a 96.2, which is the highest score we've had in the 3 years we've been running this scorecard. It's a solid A. We barely had 3 squeaky A's last year, so we're really excited that we had 3 guys that were in the solid A category this year. They're all in the House. So Shane Sandridge with a 96.2. Patrick Neville, who was last year's winner, scored a 95.8. He's a little upset about that Shane kind of edged him out this year. There's a friendly competition, apparently, that, this is for those who believe in these principles. You know, they want to win this award. So Shane edged out Patrick Neville. And then in third place was David Williams, the only other A, David Williams. He's also down in El Paso County. So those are what we call our Liberty Warriors. And we've got plaques for them that we try to get to them when we can at some kind of event that they're holding, just to get them some recognition. We think that it's important to back these guys up, to celebrate what they've done, because what they do, our standards are super high.
Yeah.
You know, we rate 385 bills, support or oppose. You know, maybe they're paying attention, and we report our positions on a weekly basis, most of the time before they even vote. So are we influencing some of these votes? I don't know. It looks like it in some cases.
Hopefully then.
But so we've got 3 solid A's and we've got 4 B's, and a B is a super high score. So we want to celebrate those people as well and recognize them. We've got Kim Ransom. We called her a Liberty Defender last year. She serves on the Joint Budget Committee, which is onerous duty. She does a tremendous job against all odds. And so we're really proud of her. Kevin Van Winkle, and then who has also done a superb job. And then two brand new legislators, Ron Hanks and Stephanie Luck, also got B's. And then we've got a slew of C's, a lot of D's and a whole lot of F's. Sadly, our Senate is, you know, they cave pretty early and often. Our highest score in the Senate was a D, and that was earned by Chris Hulbert, the Senate Minority Leader. So a few D's on the Senate side and then a whole lot of F's. So and the Democrats are all F's, very low F's. So
how about who were some of the Republicans with F's?
Oh, gosh. You know, I try not to.
You don't want to do that.
You ask me, I'll tell you. But, you know, we'd rather celebrate the good scores. But yeah, there are some pretty horrible grades on the House side. Kevin Priola brought up the basement with like a 26 point something, I believe. So and
how about Hugh McCain.
Hugh McCain was minority leader. He was a D. He scored 60. Okay. And yeah, if you ask me some other specifics, I'll tell you. On the House side, it was Colin Larson. On the Senate side, it was Kevin Priola.
You know, and I want to briefly, real quick, and I know we won't keep it much longer, but Stephanie Luck, I believe she's the one, because Patrick Neville has talked about what a rock star she is. And this is why where local politics matters, right? She was running in a district they didn't think, I think that she was not expected to win. And the grassroots people got out and the liberty-loving people got out and supported her, and she won. So that's really great to know that she gets there. She's keeping her word. She's doing what she said she was going to do, and she's making a difference, at least as much as Republicans can.
Exactly. Yeah. No, well, I don't know if you've ever listened. Go ahead.
You had Republicans like Mark Hillman and I forget the other guy. Raise money for her Democratic opponent.
Right.
Greg Brophy.
Greg Brophy. So you know, it tells you something about the dichotomy between the establishment Republicans who really raise money for Democrats and the grassroots like Patrick, Van Winkle, Dave Williams, and all the rest of them. I mean, it really is. These principles of liberty in your scorecard does an enormous benefit, because rather than just saying, well, I think these people are really liberty lovers, you prove it if it's happening or didn't. How about Barbara McIntyre up in Adams County? How did she do?
It's not McIntyre.
Yeah, I'm not.
Tanya Van Bieber.
No, well, yeah, that's another one.
All right. Sorry. Well, that's right. Well, let me put it this way. This will help us all out. So where can people go to look at the Liberty School so they can keep track of the bills going through and they can see how their elected official rank?
Thank you for asking. Yeah, it's the website is rlcco.org. That's rlcco.org. I put it in the chat where you can find just the results, but everything's right there at that website. You might have to do a drop down menu or two to find what you're looking for. But you know, not only are the final results there, but we can also break it down by category.
Okay,
and there's a huge spreadsheet there for each legislator. It's, you know, how did they vote according to individual liberty, personal responsibility, free markets, property rights, all these different categories. So equal protection, rule of law. So you can see who's strong in which category. So if they say, I'm a real fiscal conservative, you can actually look up and see what their score was.
Their concept of fiscal conservative is. So, all right.
Exactly. So it's all there. It's very transparent. It's nothing's personal. It's just, how did you vote? Go ahead.
Two things I'd like to know. One, who are the Republicans that sign on to Democratic bills as a regular basis, like Kevin Priola, who give, you know, things they can say this is bipartisan because they get a few traitorous Republicans to sign on. I'd love to have the sign on queen or king identified.
You nailed it. Kevin Priola signed that big transportation bill. He was a co-sponsor on that. That's a huge, huge bill and a huge.
How many Senate people, Republicans, went on that one? Do you know?
He's the only one, I believe.
Okay. And then I'm not sure you can do it, but from all that I've learned from the legislators we know, is that the Republicans are becoming far more leftist. They're moving more toward Democratic principles and Democratic bills and viewpoints. The last term, I thought Patrick did a pretty good job of holding Democrats' feet to the fire.
He was a minority leader.
But Hugh McCain has been sort of a disaster, at least if you believe in grassroots. Is that a fair statement?
Well, you know, the data would support that statement. That's all I can tell you. You know, we're all about the numbers.
That's good enough.
That's good enough. All right, Sue, thank you for the work you do for keeping everybody honest. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for
what
you
do. I'll be giving you a call, too.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck.
I'm going to start stalking you.
Great.
Sue Moore there. So if you can check
it out
at rlcco.org. That's rlcco.org. And Matt Arnold is pointing out, Chuck, in the chat that, you know, that Justin Everett was somebody that the crony rhinos spent, Matt says, nearly $500,000 against Justin Everett. And I think Charlene has a point. They're going to try to get Shane out too. I mean, and we got to fight back, but I think Stephanie Luck is one of the, is a good sign. And Patrick Neville is continuing to fight the fight. I wanted to real briefly, Chuck, have just a little bit of fun, if that's okay, because if it's Party Friday, I don't know if anyone saw the Joe Biden tape. No, have you seen? I was trying to do my Joe Biden imitation. Right? He was holding a bizarre news conference. He's losing it more. There was this weird picture. He was meeting with had a press conference with senators, and like Kamala Harris is standing behind a column at the White House in the back. I'm not sure what that was about. He keeps getting confused. He forgot all about that whole condo collapse in Florida. And then he, sometimes he snaps at reporters and yells at them. But then if we could play Thomas the Biden whisper, you guys haven't seen this. It's pretty funny. He held a really weird news conference yesterday. So, Thomas, can we please play the Biden whispering soundbite?
$1.9 trillion relief so far. They're going to be getting checks in the mail that are consequential. I wrote the bill on the environment. Pay them more. This is an employees bargaining chip now. What's happening?
If you see the video, it's like Joe Biden leaning way over and then like kind of doing weirdo whispering to the whole thing. Thank God Kamala Harris is at the border today, Chuck. I mean, taking care of that,
How much of the money is going to Hunter? I want to know. Is that going to be consequential for his artwork, his $500,000 artwork? Yeah.
Consequential. Ryan Call should take a lesson from, you're absolutely right, Hunter Biden. So Hunter Biden, who has, as far as we know, he's a crackhead, sex addict, Yahoo guy, and that's putting it kindly. He's not an artist, but now he's producing art that he's selling to undisclosed buyers for like $500,000. Now, does that seem funny to anybody besides me? I mean, geez, Chuck, it's like, I don't know. It's just insanity.
Ryan Call needs to get a paint and pen set and doing the art.
Right. Exactly.
Unbelievable.
So another thing too, wanted to touch base on real quick, the Derek Chauvin sentencing. He was sentenced to 22 years in prison after his conviction for second degree unintentional death with the George Floyd case. The maximum he could have got was 40 years. The prosecutors asked for 30. The typical sentence would be about 12.5. So it seems to me the judge did what I think judges often do in this kind of case, is they sort of split the difference. Some of the Floyd family members.
I'm sure he doesn't particularly feel like it's a split the difference, but yeah.
Well, right. But
his life expectancy in the pen they're going to send him to will not be 22 years. That's for sure.
Well, one thing, and I don't know how it is there, but in Colorado, if you're sentenced, you're going to end up serving really, when all is said and done, about a third. So I don't know.
They've now federally indicted him. And so now he's going to be subject to a federal. I mean, you know, we actually had a constitution. When we had a constitution, they had something called double indemnity, where you can't try somebody twice for the same thing. And that's exactly what they're doing. But what the heck? You know, as long as whatever the Democrats want, that's what they get.
Well, but Chuck, you know, all the rise in crime, that's Trump's fault. And that's blamed on us because of white rage. White rage is the new rage. And it's responsible for all the crime increase. The fact that we're throwing police officers in prison for 22 years has nothing to do with it. The fact that we're letting criminals out of jail has nothing to do with it. The fact that we have, you know, Kamala Harris, thank God she's down there at the border taking care of things, even though she's not really at the bad part of the border. It'd be like, anyway, I mean, and that's just
it. She's at the nice part of the board going, what is everybody talking about? This looks great. Hey, it's no problem.
I don't see any children in cages here. So, I mean, that is a joke. And at least I would say this. I mean, all it ever was going to be was a dog and pony show. But at least I think the Trump people shamed her into going. Don't you think?
Yes. They did shame her. And I don't know what her statements are, but I'm sure they've been massacrated 1,000 times. Okay, say we need to do better by everybody. Yeah, that's it. Right. By everybody.
And don't laugh weirdly, because that comes across as weirdness. Hey,
she's getting a little self-conscious about that.
One other thing too, wanted to touch base on and get, because you and I haven't talked about this. So Trump is doing a rally in Ohio, first one he's done since January this week. Of course, everybody now is banning Trump. So if you interview Trump, YouTube pulls you down. Oh, we are still, by the way, down on YouTube. I'm not sure for how much longer, because they don't explain their policies. They just issue edicts and you like deleted. But they are currently, and I'm not exaggerating here, deleting anything with Donald Trump involved in it. So if Donald Trump appears on something, they just delete it. And so, you know, you may have to watch it live because it could be hard to find, although Rumble is carrying everything. But what do you think? I've been reading, there was a column today, and I wasn't sure what to make of it, where I think it was in either Town Hall or Red State, where one of the columnists was saying, you know, maybe Ron DeSantis should be our person. He talked about the Colorado straw poll. You know, what do you think about that? Or is it too soon?
No, I mean, that's what the left wants. Donald Trump, only president has ever stood up for the average American. And if he wants, as a practical matter, DeSantis understands that, and he won't run if Trump runs. As a practical matter, do I think DeSantis would be a great choice if Donald Trump doesn't run? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I think he'd be a great choice. But if Donald Trump
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think you're right on that. I think that there is a good case to be made that Ron DeSantis at a certain point would make an excellent candidate. He's certainly doing and saying, not just saying, but doing all of the right things in Florida. And I think he doesn't have some of the baggage that Donald Trump has, but it's not like the Democrats are going to ignore that anyway. I think Donald Trump has to... this is my feeling anyway, and you can weigh in or chime in if you disagree, but I think Donald Trump has to be the candidate, because this war, I mean, they are going to go after whoever the Republican candidate is so hard. I think this white rage thing, they're just going to say anything you say, it's white rage. We're going to investigate you, put you under surveillance, and we're going to delete you from all social media. And we're going to, you know, terrorize anybody who tries to quote you. Donald Trump is the only person I think who can stand up to that.
I agree. I think, you know, if Trump dropped out and DeSantis stepped up, they would do everything in the world to give him all the negatives you possibly can imagine. So Donald Trump, they can't attach any more negatives. We've heard all their garbage, their lies, their bigotry, their crookedness. Right. And I think it would be Grover Cleveland is the only one who won, then lost, but then he came back and won again. So there's a precedent for that. And I think it'd be wonderful.
All right. Hey, and we are out of time.
All right.
on this party. Chuck is going on to party more. Hey, thank you to everybody. I will post the shows. They're going to be at chuckandjulie.com. They're also at bbsradio.com. Go to the Chuck and Julie show. I'll put them up on Rumble and on Podbean too. So never fear. You can find us in plenty of places. Hope everybody has a great weekend and we'll see everybody on Monday. Thank you to everybody listening and thank you to the great guys at BBS.